Well, good morning. Good to see all of you here this morning. Anybody notice the title of the sermon? I like to make fun titles. Sometimes they're one-worders. Sometimes I can puzzle Keith, but today I think he's got a pretty good handle on it in the bulletin. So good on you, Keith. The covenant of real estate with a question mark. And have you ever been promised something? Anybody, when you're a kid, like a pony? I never was, but you got a pony?
Oh.
Oh, okay. Now, when you're a kid and you get promised something, there's generally, unless it's a spanking, a great degree, yeah, right? I was promised a few of them too. There's a great deal of anticipation and impatience, right? We see this coming up on the latter stretches of December here coming up. You know, there's a great deal of impatience for a promise to be carried out. Have you ever been promised something and then not received what you were promised? I don't just mean when you went to the store somewhere and, yeah. And so someone said, have you ever have been promised something and didn't receive it and then were kept being promised it? Yeah, well, you know, any of us who have kids know what that's like. I promise, Daddy, I promise I'll never do that again. I promise, Daddy, I promise I won't, you know, that kind of thing. But have you ever been promised something by God and not received it? No, it's not. It's very unusual, isn't it? Right? Okay. I remember when we were up in Canada still, up in northern BC. I remember God telling me something very similar to what He told Abraham. And what did He tell Abraham? Do anybody remember? Up, get up, leave your place, leave your home, your father's house, and I want you to go somewhere. You know that anybody? How many of you have lived in this valley more than 10 years? Hands up, way up. Okay, good. Anybody over 15 years? Dennis, no. Oh yeah. Okay, good. I was going to say, don't be lazy over there. How many people have lived here 20 years? Wow, 30? Yeah, Craig, put your hand down, right? Yeah. Okay, good. 25 years? So I'm guessing ages. No. How many have lived here for 40 years or more? Wow. So the old timers, 50 years, dare I ask, 50 years? Okay, we ran out. Oh, Dennis. I'll stop, Dennis. Your secret's safe with me. Long time to live here. Now, can you imagine if one day God came along and said, hey, up stakes and leave. You know, when people leave the place that they live, I can tell you this by personal experience, it's not easy. And it's really uncomfortable. And not only did Abraham, it wasn't God just saying, Abraham, I want you to leave Ur and I want you to go out to the burbs, right? I want you to go out there and live out there. It's like, no, I want you to leave not only Ur, but I want you to leave the Chaldees as well. That's a big commitment. It's a major disruption to your life. And there has to be a pretty good reason for you to go. Wouldn't that be the case? Shouldn't that be kind of included in part of the package deal with the whole system? And the first thing that would come to mind for Abraham and what came to mind for us when we were told to leave was, okay, where? And God gets a little bit cute here and He says, I'm not going to tell you. I just want you to go. And He said, I'll show you where to go. But I'm not going to tell you specifically where you're going to go. Has anybody ever been homeless for a while? Okay, I have. I've been without a home. That's very disconcerting as well. To have no firm, permanent fixed address is difficult. To just kind of be neither here nor there, you know? You don't have your things. You know, we got so sad over it when I remember when we were building our house, we got so sad that just to try and find some small degree of normalcy, we would go and sit in our storage locker. Now, there was just boxes around us, but in those boxes we knew there were our stuff. And there was some kind of a feeling of permanency, some kind of feeling of home there. And you're going to laugh at me, but I remember getting a little teared up when I smelled, no kidding, this is embarrassing, I'll say it anyway, smelled a bar of soap.
Soap?
Why soap? Well, that bar of soap was a bar of soap. You can't get it down here. It's only in Canada that they make really good soap. Tell you what, down here it's weak, insipid stuff. But I remember that soap was in my shower at home, at a home that I didn't have anymore and that I hadn't had for years. It was difficult. And when we were told to leave, it took a bit of convincing. It took a little bit of divine instruction that, yeah, this is you speaking. But when we were told to leave, it was difficult because you leave everything you're used to. And we also went to a different country. And you might not think there's a great deal of difference between Canada and the United States. Is there? Okay. There is. Oh, yeah, that's right. There's a huge difference, even though on the surface it may not look that way. And so you're kind of always on your left foot. You're always off balance. Always, there's this kind of unreal sense of impermanence, of not belonging. Not belonging. And this is what he told Abraham. He said, listen, it says, I want you to get up. I want you to leave. The Lord said, well, I'll read it. It's found in Genesis 15, if you want to follow along, 15, 7 through 9. It says, and he said unto him, I am the Lord that brought you out of the land of Chaldees. Now, this was said when Abraham had left. Okay, this is afterward. And he had gone where? Anybody geographically inclined? Where did he go? Say again. Haran first, then where? Eventually, there were a couple of faithless excursions, yes, to Egypt. But where was the general area that he sojourned in? In Canaan, right? In Canaan. Says he, and so the Lord appears to him one day, and he says, hey, listen, I'm the Lord that brought you out of Ur of the Chaldees to give you this land to inherit it. Woo! So Abraham's looking around. He's like, okay, well, God promised that he would tell him where, right? Okay, so Abraham's like, oh, this is great. And he said, this is Abraham, he said to the Lord, whereby or how shall I know that I will inherit it? Good question. Right? And I think, maybe I'm wrong, but it seems to be implied in here that Abraham was feeling a little off balance and dispossessed. Because, you know, when we're that way, we kind of like assurances, don't we? To be reassured that, you know, you sure? You sure? And it's interesting that right after that question, God says, I want you to take a heifer of 3 years of age, a she-goat 3 years of old, and a ram 3 years old, and a turtle dove and a young pigeon. And what did Abraham do with those animals? He sacrificed them. He sacrificed them. He cut them in half. He laid the halves back together on an altar, and he watched over those sacrifices. And I won't get too deeply into what all that means. We might touch on it a little bit later if I have time, which I may not. But God makes a covenant with him, a promise to inherit. It's interesting, when I was reading that, I thought, steady on. When you promise someone something, especially if you're God, shouldn't you keep your word? Should, right? God's trustworthy, always keeps his word, doesn't he? Did Abraham inherit the promised land? Okay, no, he didn't. No, don't shake your head. He didn't. He didn't at all. Okay? And I have scripture to prove it. So listen up with my proof text. It says, and this is in Acts 7, verse 5. It says, and he gave him none inheritance in it. No, not even so much as to set his foot on. In other words, in our popular vernacular, you would say not one square foot of it. He promised him something, and he didn't deliver. He didn't deliver. Yet he promised that he would give it to him for a possession and to his seed after him, when as yet he didn't even have children. God was doing this a lot in Abraham's life, if you read as the story of his life. It's kind of making all these promises and then, you know, hope deferred, making Abraham's heart sick and all that kind of thing. But it says here that he didn't even give him a square foot of what he promised him. And there's a lot of square feet in Canaan. It was from Egypt to the Euphrates River that God had specifically delineated. So what's going on? And yet he promised him that we might be tempted to say, well, he promised it to his kids. So through his kids, he fulfilled his promise. But it says in what I just read, it said he promised him that he and his children would inherit it. Not only that, God got bolder, because when Isaac finally came along, What says here that the promise was given also to Isaac? And was it given to Jacob? You remember that night. He had just behaved very badly, was off to his uncle's house, and God says, look around you. I'm going to give you all this land. Everything you see here is going to be yours. I promise. I promise. And he made covenants with them. Every single one of them he made a covenant with. And it's interesting that even though God had promised him that inheritance, neither he, nor his son, nor his grandson received it. It says in Hebrews, that where we read, it says that he sojourned in the land of promise as a stranger in a strange country, dwelling in what? Tabernacles, or we would call it tents. Now, I lived in a tent when I was growing up. We had big canvas camp meeting tents, that, you know, the ones you put on the platform, and then there's rails, and you tie them to the rails. Have you any? No, just me? They have them at Hope Camp meeting all the time. Anyway, they're canvas tents, and they're probably, I don't know, 12 feet long by 8 feet wide, and that's what we lived in, but they weren't permanent, right? And when it says that Abraham sojourned, dwelling in tabernacles, it indicates that he had no fixed foundation for himself, doesn't it? There's no foundation in a tent. The tent just goes down on whatever piece of ground you happen to pitch it on. But it's not permanent. It isn't permanent. But God has made a covenant here with Abraham. So what is this covenant? It's a covenant that he hadn't fulfilled when Abraham died. He didn't fulfill it when Isaac died or when Jacob died. In fact, where did Jacob die? Israel by that time, had died in Egypt. He didn't even die in the promised land. So what's going on? What is this covenant? Doesn't sound like a great promise, does it? And if you were Abraham, would you maybe possibly just sort of maybe be tempted that he hadn't kept his word to you? We came down here, we didn't know where we were going to live. In fact, we had come down earlier. Couldn't find anywhere to buy, any piece of land to buy anywhere. But we sold our house and down we went, you know. But God kept his promise to us. But did God fail Abraham in his promise? I am asking a question. No feedback. Did he fail his promise to him? It says in the Bible that he didn't give him a square foot of of what he promised him. Seems a little strange, doesn't it? Seems a little strange because God, God's promises, the Bible said, are backed by all the honor of his name. And he promised to give it to him. Now you say, well, that's for a future promise. And I'd like to take a look at how Abraham dealt with this. Because if God seems to fail us, it can be hard to deal with, can't it? I found it very much that way. We put our house up for sale. You know, God gave some amazing, I could tell you stories. We don't have the time, but maybe just one. When we were in Hazleton, work was going great. Everything was just ticking along like a well-oiled machine. And then one day, everything in the shop came to a screeching halt. Just like it just fell off a cliff. And I, not being the slowest study in the world, decided that this might be God trying to tell me something. And God says, if you want to know what he wants you to do, go ask him. And I believe there is a God, and so I thought, well, I'm going to take him at his word, and I'm going to go ask him. So I went into our bedroom. I remember it very distinctly, but there was a couch in there, Victorian couch, and I knelt down in front of the couch, and I said, okay, Lord, what's up? Because this isn't like you to just stop providing for us. Jesus Christ is the same yesterday, today, and forever. So what's going on? What do you want? And the only thing, and I said, and I'm staying here until you tell me. And if you could have been in that room watching, you know, maybe a fly on the wall or something, you'd have seen me kneeling in front of my couch start to laugh, and laugh hard. And the reason I was laughing so hard is that God had told me, I want you to move to Walla Walla. And I just busted up laughing, and there's a reason for that. And she's sitting over there, You see, in Canada, there is, correct me if I'm wrong, but in my part of Canada, there is this idea that because Scripture identifies the United States in prophecy as the lamb-like beast, that we don't really want to go down there too much, because those folks down there, she's nodding her head, she's from Canada, those folks down there, those are the baddies that are going to do the bad thing and make all the world, so we don't need much to do with that. And we had an American pastor up north that was up there ministering in our church, and Shauna would vehemently, every time this subject came up, say, "I will never move to the beast power country, ever." And so I knew that, and I was sitting there. When that came back, I started to laugh. I said, "You know what? if this is really you speaking, then you're going to have to make this happen." And I got a little bit cheeky with God, because I said, "And I am not going to say anything to her. I'm not going to do your work for you. You're going to do it yourself. I'm not going to say anything." And I don't remember exactly how much time went by, but it was a little while. A few things dribbled into the shop, but I mean, there was no reason for it. Nobody, I didn't put anybody's kitchen in upside down, hanging on their ceiling or anything, right? So, but nothing. And a little bit of time goes by, and one day I'm down in the shop, and Shauna comes down, and she says, "We got to go for a walk." And I'm like, "Honey, it's minus 20 or 30 or whatever it was. It's cold. I don't want to go out there, you know?" I chuckle when I hear this winter thing down here. It's still kind of cute. But anyway, I said, "Okay, whatever." She had that look, that look I'm talking about? That look like we're going for a walk look. And so I went walking, and we're walking along. She says, "You know what? I think God's telling us we need to move to Walla Walla." Yeah, right? That was my reaction too. Like, what? Say again? So now, if that was you, would you take that as an indication that maybe that's what you're supposed to do? Right? And a whole bunch of other things happened to confirm the hypothesis that I'd formed, that we were supposed to move. Lots of things, really cool things. We got them written down, and I have a really bad memory that way, but there were a lot of things, so much so that we put our house up for sale. And we thought, and this is how it works, we thought, well, God said to go, so God's going to guess, ding, 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 there we go. A year goes by, nothing. Another year goes by. Everybody's telling you you're hearing things and you should probably get help. Literally. God said to do something and it didn't happen. God had made so I can kind of relate to Abraham here a little bit. But God said, "I'm going to give it to you," and then nothing happens. Nothing but crickets. It tries your faith. I think I wore out Highway 16 between New Hazleton and Old Hazleton walking it, trying to figure out where God was and all. What are you playing at? Are you just trying to confuse me? Sean and I both wore it out, I should say. So here it appears, though, because God didn't give him a square foot, it appears that God hasn't kept his word, because Abraham died. Abraham died without receiving an inheritance. Did he receive a promise, though, by the way? He did, right? He received Isaac, his son, who he shouldn't have been able to have, right? That wonderful little product of geriatrics. This is great. The son of promise. It shouldn't have happened. Impossible. By human point of view, it's impossible. So God keeps that promise, but there's this other one hanging in the air. So I thought, well, there's got to be some kind of personal testimony from Abraham about how he related to this seemingly failed promise of inheriting this land. And I've been doing a lot of studying about covenants and these kind of things for that book that I'm writing. And I thought, wow, this covenant we're talking about here, is it just a covenant of real estate? Is it, what would a covenant of real estate mean? I don't mean CC&Rs, where if you want to live here, y'all better toe the rules of the homeowners association. But was this just a promise of real estate, of dirt, of land? Because if it was, God failed. God failed Abraham to keep his promise, because Abraham died before he even inherited a square foot, if that's what this we're talking about here. If that's what this covenant is about, then he failed him. And so I thought, okay, there's got to be something more here to this covenant than simply a land grant, right? simply, you got to, you know, he told them, you're not going to get it, by the way. He said, I'm going to give it to you. And he turned around and said, oh, and by the way, you all are going to go down to Egypt. Be there for 400 years. And Abraham's like, 400 years? How long am I going to live? You know? And he said, and then I'll bring it out when the people that live there, when their iniquity is full, and I'll give it to them. So, you notice in the promise, it doesn't say, I'll just give it to your children. He says, I'm going to give it to you too. But if you are dead, how much can you inherit? It's somebody else that's going to inherit, not you. And yet God says, you are going to. But we get an insight in Hebrews 11 as to how Abraham viewed this promise. And it's helpful. And it says here, by faith he, Abraham, sojourned in the land of promise as in a strange country, dwelling in tabernacles with Isaac and Jacob, the heirs with him, who didn't receive a square foot, of the same promise. For, now this gets significant. For he looked for a city which hath foundations, permanence. And he's living in tents, so foundations to him would have been very important if he's anything like me, or if he's anything I would guess like you. We don't like being displaced, although my mother and father might be the exception to the rule. I grew up thinking I was abducted by gypsies. They moved all the time, but I didn't like it. Maybe that's one reason I hate dispossession. But it says that he looked for a city which has foundations, and whose builder was it? Whose builder and maker was who? Was God. Anybody know anything about any cities built by God? Anybody? Yeah, I know of one city built by God. In Abraham's life, his expectation, it says here, was not for something in this earth, was it? That was not what he's looking forward to. He understood God's promise to be more than simply a land grant or a covenant of real estate. He understood that there was more involved in what God was promising than what met the eye at first. And sometimes we can be somewhat myopic in our vision. We don't have the eyesight that we need to look past the surface things that God of God and find the bigger picture and the deeper meaning of it. But Abraham apparently did. Because his expectation was not in this earth. His expectation was a heavenly city that God made, and an inheritance in that. So he wasn't looking around at Canaan going, maybe I'll put my house up on that ridge over there. That's not how he looked at things. This world was not the focus of this promise, in other words. So the promise, when Abraham saw it, was a promise of inheritance, but not of this sin-filled world, but of a city whose builder and maker was God. Now, this city is described to us in Revelation. If you want to turn there, last part of Revelation. I won't go through the entire description. The New Jerusalem, the description of that starts in 21. And it says, I saw a new heaven and a new earth, for the old heaven and the old earth, that includes the physical land of Canaan, right? Okay. Had disappeared, and the sea also was gone. And I saw the holy city, the new Jerusalem, coming down from God out of heaven like a beautiful bride prepared for her husband. And I heard a shout from the throne saying, look, the home of God is now among his people. And it goes on and it talks about them. It talks about the description of the sea. Now, it's pretty large, is it not? And I find that encouraging. How many miles long is it? 1,200, was it? Can't remember offhand. 1,400 miles. Sorry. 200 miles off. What's it, 200 miles? 1,400 miles long, 1,400 miles wide, and 1,400 miles tall. Now, you know why I find encouragement in that number? Is because there's a lot of room there. And that implies something. That implies that God's work isn't going to be a failure. That's a big house to fill up, isn't it? We're almost empty nesters, and we're rattling around in that, not even that big a house, but there's a house 1,400 miles square and 1,400 miles high, and God has built it. It talks about the throne, a sea of glass mingled with fire. It talks about this river of water of life that comes down, cascading down. Can you imagine the waterfall, 1,400 mile high waterfall? whoa, that's going to be amazing. I just picture fountains everywhere, right? Fountains everywhere. It's got foundations that are made from precious gems. You can wrap your head around that one. It's got 12 gates. What are they made from? What are the doors made of? Pearl, right? Yeah, I don't know. Have you ever thought about the size of the oyster must be? Ay, ay, ay. But this magnificent city is described, and it is beyond our comprehension. This is what Abraham was looking forward to. He was looking forward to an inheritance in a city that God had made. And it's interesting that it implies something else. Because if you have an inheritance in that city, it implies that there's something is different with you than what it was. Do you remember God made something beforehand, and what was that? We're there at the beginning. God did what? He planted a garden. Did he not? The first family on this earth was given a home. What happened to that home? It was lost. They were driven from it. An angel was stationed at the door of the gateway to keep them out. But here we have a promise to Abraham that involves another home being made for him. Now, is it just for him, or is it for you and I? Now, how many here are full-blooded Israelite Jews? Oh, sorry, get my hand down. Yeah, not one. So is this, is this promise just for Abraham and his literal children? Or is this promise for anyone, for everyone? It says here that in Galatians 6:14-16, it says, "For in Christ Jesus, neither circumcision availeth anything nor uncircumcision, but a new creature. And as many as walk according to this rule, peace be on them and mercy upon the Israel of God." It says that if we are heirs to the promise, we are spiritually the same heir as Abraham, and we have the same promise. But here's something very interesting, because it implies something amazing. In Revelation, let me find it for you here, the 21st chapter and verse 27, it says this: "And there shall in no wise," speaking of the New Jerusalem now, "and there shall in no wise enter into it anything that defileth, neither whatsoever worketh abomination or maketh a lie, but they which are written in the Lamb's book of life." And also in Revelation 22:14-15, it says, "Blessed are they that do his commandments, that they may have a right to the tree of life, and may enter in through the gates into the city. For without are dogs and sorcerers and whoremongers, murderers and idolaters, and whoever loveth and maketh a lie." Who's going to be allowed to dwell in that city? Well, come on. Interaction. Those who dwell in that city will be those who keep the commandments of God. And more importantly, though, there's something that's never going to enter into that city, and that is anything that defiles. In other words, the citizens of this city are going to be absolutely, completely righteous, completely perfect, completely, without any stain, without any sins, without any temper, without any lust, without anything. Now, the scriptures declare what about mankind? It says, "For all," what, "have sinned," and all, present tense, everybody, "fall short." Anybody here figure that you got, you know, that they should turn the keys over to your apartment, to that city? How about Abraham? Maybe he was exceptionally good. Well, we already heard someone say he went down to Egypt. Thank you very much for that segue, by the way. Why did he go down to Egypt? God said he'd take care of him, right? Okay? Go to that land. I'll take care of you. I'll be with you. I'll be your God. I'll bless you. And Abraham, first sign of trouble, he's running for Egypt. So I would call that faithlessness, wouldn't you? Right? Lack of faith. When he gets to Egypt, what happens? man, the King Pharaoh's going to see my sweetheart of a wife, and man, he's going to want her, so I'm going to lie about it. So you know, and you see this over and over again in these failings in Abraham, right? And yet God told him that he would give him an inheritance. And Abraham understood that that inheritance would be in a city where only the righteous and perfect dwelt. So this is the implication. It wasn't just a covenant of real estate. It was a covenant of righteousness. For in order for God to tell Abraham that he would dwell in a city filled with nothing but perfection, he had to promise, include in that promise, a promise that God would bring Abraham into a condition fit to live in that city. It's the inescapable conclusion that must be drawn. And so the covenant to Abraham isn't just a covenant of real estate. It's a covenant of salvation. It is a promise that I will make it possible for you to dwell in my presence. Now that's cool. Do you understand now why God said, take these animals and sacrifice them? What are the sacrificial service animals and the ceremonies that we see in the sacrificial system? Who do they represent? Jesus. You remember what Abraham said, how will I know? And some people ask that, and a lot of us ask it. You know, I hear it all the time. Oh, I hope I'm ready when Jesus comes. Abraham knew what he was being promised, and that's why he asked, how will I know? Because to human understanding, it doesn't seem possible, does it? It doesn't seem possible, at least not when I look at my own life. And so Abraham asks, how will I know? And God says, this is how you're going to know. Take a sacrifice. Take a sacrifice. And divide it down the middle. And that's significant. Do you know what happened on the cross? Well, we know Jesus died there. But when it comes to the relationship between the Father and the Son, Christ said to his disciples, the Father and I are one. And they had been one from eternity. Now, some of y'all are just embarking on a marriage. Sean and I have been married for coming on, 27 years? Ooh, I'm dating myself. For a while. The longer in a marriage that God blesses, the longer that it goes, the deeper it gets and the more painful it is to be apart. I'm a sissy. She's got to go away tomorrow for a whole day. A whole day. Anybody want to send me cards? That's fine. But on that cross, you see someone who'd been together one for eternity. And on that cross, we see this sacrifice played out, where that sacrifice is ripped in two, torn apart, torn in half. It wasn't just the Son who suffered at the cross. It was the Father as well. That separation, that ripping apart of two hearts that were had become one. We can never, I don't think, ever understand how deep that pain must have been. And Abraham says, how will I know that you will give me what you've promised me? How do you and I know that God will give us what he has promised us? Look at the sacrifice. The sacrifice that the Father, the Son, and the Spirit made at that cross is our guarantee. Ironclad guarantee that he will give us not only heavenly real estate, because it's not just about heavenly real estate, but he will give us a place in a kingdom that has no pain, no sorrow, no selfishness, no sin, not even the slightest echo of it. That sacrifice is the assurance that we will receive that in our inheritance. That we will have a place in his family as brothers and sisters forever. God bless you.